Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome to Travolting, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering The Devil's Reign. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the inaugural episode of Travolting, coming to you via recording, coincidentally 2 days before the actual American inauguration.
Hashtag the end of the world.
That is correct. This is a Biden-era podcast. my name is Jeff Sweeney, as you heard from the title, and I'm joined by my good friend and producer for the show,
Stuart Elmore.
Yes, producer Stu himself.
It's great to be here.
All right, now to business. I just want to get a little housekeeping out of the way before we get into the business of the episode. First of all, you're probably asking yourself, who are we and what do we have to say? Why are we here? Why are you listening to us? We are two unemployed filmmakers living in Chicago.
Too real. Stop.
I am recently unemployed as of yesterday. I thought I had a job, but I didn't.
Wait, did you not get that PA job?
I did not get that PA job.
Oh, I'm sorry, man.
But it's fine because we have more time to record this.
Hey, I'm also unemployed too, yeah. So it's all right.
And, we're consumed by a passion for one specific man, one specific actor.
Praise be.
Who is he, you may ask? Well, if you looked at the title of the show, you can probably assume that it is the one and only screen actor, John Travolta.
The man, the myth, the legend himself.
Yep. I've always just been puzzled by him. I feel like every movie I watch, I get a piece of this puzzle, but I never have the whole picture. You know, he's just a guy who's never afraid to really go for it. Remarkable history that kind of charts the history of Hollywood, going from the new Hollywood of the 1970s to modern day Travolta exploitation. He's been defined by monstrous successes and catastrophic failures, as well as a life dotted with startling achievements and unspeakable tragedies. He's a very interesting character who we're hoping to really dive into with this show. But it's important to note that this isn't a bit. Like, we're not here to make fun of Vinnie Barbarino. We're here to explore him and kind of discover what is his motive as an actor, what's his mantra, what's his goal. We're genuinely perplexed by him, and we want to figure it out. We're here to discover the arc and exegesis of his career and kind of just put together who this guy is.
And don't get us wrong, we are going to be reviewing some really bad movies on this
show.
Yes,
we are covering three of the only 52 movies to have a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, so things will certainly get dire at various points in this podcast.
We're hitting a high moment here on our first one.
Yeah. But my goal is to, you know, watch all 66 films of John Travolta's career, hopefully foster some really good discussions, hopefully discover some things and have a good time doing it. All the while dragging poor Stuart along the way with me.
I'm happy to be here, man.
through this canon. And we hope that you all join us along the way and have a good time while doing so. Before we get into the main thesis of the episode and the movie we're covering and kind of just talking about John himself, I want to go over some of the boring ground rules and the commandments we'll be sticking to for this show. We're going to be comprehensive, but we do have to set some limits for our own sanity. And also just for the continued viability of my relationship with my girlfriend. I'm already going to be watching 66 John Travolta movies. I could not include 82 episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter. So on that, our limits are going to be we're only covering the movies. We will not be covering documentary. I mean, we will be covering documentaries. Wait.
TV shows.
Yeah, can you cut out like 10 seconds prior?
I'm not cutting anything out.
we will be covering documentaries that he has appeared in. There are a few in our list. The list will be posted on a few places that I'll share at the end of the episode. So we'll be covering any feature films he's in, television films, cameos, documentaries. We will not be covering television shows. As I said, I could not justify watching 82 episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter for a one-hour podcast episode.
It might be a Patreon thing in the future.
This Patreon, wow, you're going really ahead. This unfortunately does also include, we will not be covering at this time, The People versus O.J. Simpson. But frankly, that's like a year away, so we could get there, decide to just do it anyway.
Bob Shapiro is my man.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a cliffhanger to like kind of propel you to keep listening to the show, come back in a year, see if we've covered The People versus O.J. Simpson, and then call us out. But anyway, that's basically the extent of the rules. We're just going to be covering the movies of John Travolta, talking about them, having some fun guests on, coming to some realizations both in our own lives and about him. And Stu and I will be your guides, your chaperones through this crazy canon of films. I would recommend, if you're able, to watch the movies before we post the episodes, just so you can have some context going in.
This will be an exception.
But obviously there are some movies that you may not want to watch, or there's some that are extremely difficult to watch. So we're not going to judge you if you don't. We'll try and make this as accessible as possible.
I will judge.
Just so that you have a clear entry point and can come along with us. But that all being said, all the boring housekeeping stuff out of the way, let's kind of go into talking about John Travolta.
John Travolta. Yeah. Quick thing, a little bit about me is, you know, I grew up in Midwest Indiana, and one of the things that sort of centered my family around some of our pastimes was watching, you know, family films. And I got to say, one of the key landmark family films that I watched when I was a kid with my parents and my younger brother was Wild Hogs, which has a stellar cast of Tim Allen. Yeah, Tim Allen.
Woody Allen.
I was almost going to say Woody Allen. It's not Woody Allen, but he is a wild hog. Tim Allen, William H. Macy, John Travolta, and...
Don't look at me. I've not seen Wild Hogs.
But Bad Boys.
We have like 53 episodes to go.
But Bad Boys.
Oh, Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence. Martin Lawrence is in this, and it's got another bigger cast, but just... Just to give the audience perspective is that I love John Travolta so much for like just what he's done with the cinematic community and like for people who have grown up on some of his films. It's amazing. So to go into John Travolta a little bit, John Joseph Travolta, who is 6'2".
Good to know. He's 3 inches taller than me.
Don't need to brag about your height, Jeff, but
he is,
anyway.
3 feet taller than you.
He's 3 feet taller than me. He was born February 18th, 1954 in Englewood, New Jersey, USA. So, John Travolta, one of six children of Helen Travolta and Salvatore Samuel J. Travolta, not Samuel Jackson. Boy, would that be a twist. His father was of Italian descent and his mother was of Irish ancestry. For folks who can call me out on this, I am indeed reading this from IMDb mini bio, so you can all look this up yourselves, but I'm going to continue. His father owned a tire repair shop called Travolta Tires in Hillsdale, New Jersey.
And I've researched it. It unfortunately no longer exists. Had it have existed, we would have made a special episode where we went to get our tires replaced.
Just to talk about Travolta Tires.
Yes.
I imagine there should have been like a museum for just Travolta Tires.
As near as I can tell, it has been razed to the ground. Deeply unfortunate.
Deeply unfortunate. So Travolta started acting, appearing in a local production of Who Will Save the Plowboy. Doesn't say what year he did that in. Don't know if that was something when he was a kid or a young adult. But his mother, herself an actress and dancer, enrolled him in a drama school in New York where he studied voice, dancing, and acting. All makes sense. He decided to combine all three of these skills to become a musical comedy performer. And at 16, he landed his first professional job in a summer stock production of the musical Bye Bye Birdie. Hella, hella.
Good show.
He quit school at 16, hella, hella, and moved to New York and worked regularly in summer stock and on television commercials. When work became scarce in New York, he went to Hollywood, as all unemployed people do, and appeared in minor roles in several series. A role in the national touring company of the hit 1950s musical Grease. That's
Whoa.
Right. He was in
That's
Grease.
That's a bit of foreshadowing.
He was in
John
Grease.
John Travolta was in
Grease? Before Grease, which is crazy. An opening in the New York production of Grease gave him his first Broadway role at age 18. You know what I was doing at 18, Jeff? You know what I was doing?
Selling tires?
Nothing. I was like a senior in high school in show choir, and I was in Indiana. I didn't do any of the shit he's done.
I was a freshman in college in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what part of the year this was happening in, but I was either a senior or a freshman in college in Muncie, Indiana, Ball State.
You gotta love how the entertainment industry works, that he had to move to L.A. to get a job as an actor in New York, the place he was coming from.
Yeah. That is kind of a weird
one. The entertainment industry is crazy.
It is a weird one. And so after Grease, he became a member of the company of the Broadway show Over Here, which starred the Andrews sisters. After 10 months in Over Here, he decided to try Hollywood once again. Once back in Hollywood, he had a little trouble getting roles in numerous television shows, which we are not going to be covering. He was seen on The Rookies 1972, Emergency, I say that with an exclamation mark, 1972, and The Medical Center 1969. And that was when he then came into making his very first feature film in 1975, The Creme de la Crop. The Devil's Reign.
The Devil's Reign.
The Devil's Reign.
That is the subject of our first episode, the 1975 Robert Fuest film, The Devil's Reign, starring a crazy cast that we'll get into in a
really
few
crazy cast. So, Jeff, should we start going through just like the plot of this first for people who more than likely haven't seen this?
We'll go through the movie, kind of let discussion branch off of that.
Yeah.
this movie is insane from the start.
It is.
You see, like, I knew the basics. I actually thought it was like a space movie. I don't know why. I just saw William Shatner and I thought it was going to be something in space.
I thought it was going to get a lot more graphic.
I was very quickly proven wrong. It starts off with this Bosch painting of like people being like consumed by the devil.
Yeah. Very hellish.
Moans of the damned over the opening credits.
All that was missing was Mozart's Lacrimosa. Yeah. That's all that it was missing.
And I'm already like, okay, this is going to be this kind of movie. And then it starts listing the cast. Ernest Borgnine.
Yep.
Mermaid Man himself. William Shatner.
William Shatner.
Tom
Captain
Skerritt.
Kirk. Yep.
All appearing over this horrific image to Moans of the Damned behind them.
Yep.
Then it says, it cuts to technical advisor, high priest of the Church of Satan himself. Anton Selesny, I think was his name.
So, yeah, you heard it here, that the technical advisor of The Devil's Reign.
This movie had the actual high priest of the Church of Satan as a technical
advisor. High priest of the
advisor.
Church of Satan.
At that point, I was like, this is going to be the greatest movie I've ever seen. This is already nuts. Then it's like edited by Michael Caine, and I'm like, oh, cool, Spielberg's guy did this. But still a wild opening credits.
Yeah.
I'm already fascinated by what this insane movie is going to have for us.
As am I.
After the credits continue to be wild, I'm already unnerved. Cuts to a farmhouse in rural Indiana. I mean, not Indiana, Arizona.
Yeah,
very similar.
It has palm trees.
Yeah, there are palm trees.
There are palm trees in there.
There are palm trees in Arizona.
But it's raining.
Yes.
Not like Arizona.
But you'd say it's the devil's rain, almost. Robert Fuest.
You dog, man.
But we start off with William Shatner, an older couple.
Yeah.
Actually, not an older couple, an older woman and her father.
Is that her father?
It is her father, because her husband's the one
John
who shows
guy.
Up the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, who looks like a backwoods Santa Claus.
That's a really good description, actually.
They're frantic that neither her son or her husband has come home.
Yeah.
Eventually, a truck pulls up. Out comes
William
Captain
Shatner.
Kirk, William Shatner, who runs into the house wearing a very tightly fitted vest and a button-down flannel. He's looking good. He's acting same as he did on Star Trek, a lot of exaggerated, but
same role.
We love him for it. He's like, oh, my father hasn't come home yet. He's a little perturbed about this as well, but he insists he's probably just caught out in the rain. Then another truck pulls up.
Rain.
Another truck pulls up. It must be his father, her husband. They go out. He's shrouded in darkness, but you can see him walking through. By the way, this movie looks really good. There's something about that 1970s film stock that just all this stuff is popping.
Does it, though?
It looks really good.
I will grant you this. This has, like, the fake rain machines from the 70s, when it's, like, fat rain. Like, this is fat rain.
Big rain.
Big droplets coming down.
This very, like, stark look. A lot of dark blues and yellows. Anyway, it looks great. This guy's walking through this this foggy shroud of rain towards Shatner and his mom.
The devil's rain.
The devil's rain. And there's just like, Steve, is that you, Steve? He walks up. He has no eyes. His eyes are gone.
His eyes are gone.
He is melting in the rain.
Yeah, he's melting like a wax figure.
He is melting. They're remarkably chill about this.
Okay, so I need to talk about this with you. Because at one point, doesn't the wife or the mom, whatever, say like, hail Satan or whatever? Like she says like in nomino Sante or whatever.
She
says some satanic...
No, she's doing a religious prayer when she gets back in. Because she is a...
She's not a Satanist.
No, she's the opposite of a Satanist, which I suppose would be a Christian.
okay, I thought they were Satanists, but like cool Satanists.
No, they're the descendants. We'll get to that.
They're
we'll
the descendants. The descendants, right, of Satanists. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
They are really cool about him melting, though.
But they're very chill about their father and husband melting before their eyes and having no eyes. The wife's just like, Steve? Steve, as he collapses into a puddle on the ground.
It melts.
It melts.
And William Shatner here is doing that stone cold gaze of like, ugh.
Anyway, their father, husband melts. They run back inside. They go back inside, leaving him out there. He's a puddle. Like, what can you do?
You scoop him up.
You scoop him up.
Put him in a cup.
Put him in a cup.
Put him up on your fireplace. Yeah. Be like, that's Steve.
That's Dad. They go back in. The mom's like, they found us. And she rips open the floorboards and produces a large tome, a book that we do not get the context for until later, but it is large, and she says this guy named Corbis is after it.
Corbis.
Dun,
dun, dun! Lightning strike.
So Shatner decides he's going to go out there and teach Corbis some business. He's going to find him, take him out. He tells the mom, hide the book again, stay inside.
And wear this amulet. It means he can't hurt you.
Yeah, and he grabs this... He doesn't grab the amulet until he comes back in. But he goes out. He puts this huge cowboy hat on.
Oh, right.
And when he puts the cowboy hat on, that's when I figured out what this movie is about.
Which is what,
this Jeff? Is such a post-Watergate, post-Exorcist, like, movie about the American man fighting the forces of evil, corrupting his country.
Oh, no.
I'm going to convince you this movie's good, because it is.
No.
This is going to be 1975,
every single episode.
Is 1975. Just... Watergate has just happened. Ford is president. Exorcist made a lot of money.
I'm going to stop you there. They made this movie before. Like, they were in production of the movie before the Watergate actually happened, don't you think?
No, Watergate was 73, 74.
Was it?
Yeah, this was shot like late 74 at best.
I'm not sure if I'm buying the corruption of the evil thing.
He puts this cowboy hat on.
Okay, yeah.
He's going to go out there and he's going to fight...
The forces of darkness.
These forces of darkness that are converging upon the American homestead.
You're right.
In the middle of the desert.
In the middle of the desert.
He walks out to his car. He gets in. There's something in his car. What was it?
It wasn't like a cross thing, was it? Or
there's a like a voodoo doll stabbed to the steering wheel.
Right.
And he's like, oh no. And he hears shuffling inside the house.
And he just... chillaxingly,
yeah, he walks casually, he up saunters to up house. To he saunters up to his house
and just watches as the lights assaulted. Are yeah also, and I wrote this down because when he walks in to like check out what happened, John is hung upside down by his feet, by his ankles, and he's saying something like, oh,
and he's like, yeah, they came for us,
and it's like, I was just here, bitch, like.
And William Shatner's like, I leave for five minutes
and you already get my mom kidnapped by the devil. But he doesn't go upstairs to check.
He does not go upstairs. He walks into the house.
And this is clearly a two-story house.
Yes. John is hanging upside down. He's like, they took her. Shatner checks around. He opens the floorboards. The book is still there.
Yeah.
He did not get the book. He leaves the book. Wait, no, he takes it out later. But he grabs this Christian amulet and puts it on. And now it's no longer just a quest to fight Corbis and figure out what's going on. This is a rescue mission.
For his mom.
This movie becomes a Russian nesting doll of rescue missions by the end of it. There's a lot of rescuing.
So we just went from like fighting the corruption, the dark forces of corruption, to rescuing his mom.
Well, now the force of corruption have corrupted his mom. It's this time, it's personal.
Mm. Okay.
This time, it's personal.
Okay. I do feel like he did just kind of leave John there to die.
Oh yeah, he cuts John down at least.
He cuts John down, but then just leaves him. It's like,
but like John's like the grandfather. It's not his. He's not too concerned at this point.
Right. Not concerned for his well being.
He's like, yeah, he's on his way out anyway. I don't know. My mom only has a few years.
My mom has a few years. No. So okay, so William Shatner leaves. Then
he leaves. He drives through the night. And we get this very beautiful montage of the deserts of Indiana, his Arizona. Car, the Arizona.
There's no deserts in Indiana.
Should be.
It should be a wasteland.
It's a desert of morals.
Yeah.
No disrespect. If you're listening to this and you're from Indiana, I mean the rest of Indiana, not you.
Just my whole family.
You are a very cool person, and I like you.
You just but like to ripped all my the whole Indians family.
Who do not listen to this podcast.
I'm from Indiana, by the way.
You said this.
I did say this.
And I'm from Philadelphia for context, because I guess we're just saying where we're from now. This is already going so well.
This is going great. So William Shatner leaves.
Yeah, he leaves. He drives through the night. Beautiful shots of the arid Arizona deserts and mountain ranges and an abandoned gas station. It's beautiful. He gets to this town. I cannot remember the name of the town. Let me check.
Redwood.
Is it called Redwood?
That's the abandoned one, right?
Yeah, the abandoned town.
The abandoned town is Redwood.
Okay, so he gets to Redwood. This abandoned, like, clearly it was made for a Western movie, and they were able to get it for filming for this movie, so they used it.
Can I jump in here and talk about like my own personal experience until like you stop me? So my Amazon Prime account was apparently glitching up, and I had hit play and the sound was out of sync, but no joke, I literally thought it was just the movie was that bad that the sound was not in sync. And so I text Jeff and I'm like, Jeff, this is so terrible, the sound is out of sync. He's like, what? It wasn't out of sync for me. So then I had to like reset my Prime, and then it turned out it wasn't out of sync, it was just my own Amazon Prime account.
And that's when Stuart realized this was a great movie.
Not true.
It is a good movie.
Continue.
This movie...
He's in Redwood.
This movie rules.
It does not rule. It rules in hell.
It rules in hell, but also rules on earth. One could say it rains.
So he gets to
Redwood. I'm looking at my notes, and at this point in the movie, I literally just wrote, the shit rules. He gets to Redwood and he meets this Ernest Borgnine.
Corbus.
Yes, Corbus. Has very pronounced eyebrows.
Also, because Corbus just like appears to him as just like one of the somebody who lives in the town.
Yeah, he just like shows up as like a sheriff looking guy.
Yeah. Very non-evil looking right now, except for the eyebrows.
Shatner can't get this water to come out of like a trough.
Yeah.
And Corbus is able to get it to come out immediately. It's
magic.
And Shatner's like, should I drink this water? Are you about to poison me? Corbus tells him, just drink it. Shatner just goes for it. He's fine from the water. It was not poisoned.
To our knowledge.
The devil's fruit was actually just okay at this point.
It was water. Was it fruit?
This was like if the snake had given Adam and Eve an apple, and they're like, yeah, that's fine.
You're just digging all of the religious overtones with this one.
For that one, there's absolutely nothing to do with the water. I don't know what the water's about.
Okay.
So we actually get this really cool shot of the two of them in like a tracking. Essentially, the camera's just like following them as they walk through the porches of this town.
Yeah.
Each of them kind of gaining superiority in the conversation and passing each other. Very cool sequence. As they're like, the tension between them ratchets up. Eventually, Corbus...
goes into the church, right?
He goes into the church.
Yeah.
And Shatner follows him in. That's it.
And that's when we see.
And then Corbus disappears as soon as he enters the church.
Yeah.
And then what's in the church? A satanic ritual zone.
Yep.
This boarded up church, this like symbol of Americana, consumed by the satanic forces of darkness. It's a bunch of guys in black hoods, all chanting.
And?
In front. What was that? Oh, yeah. None of them have eyes. It's all black pits. At the front of the room, there's an altar with a image of the ram. The ram.
That's the satanic
thing. Upside down cross and pentagram.
Yeah. They got all the imagery here.
This is like a true ritual zone.
Right.
Can I just say, I love when movies have cults with hooded guys who chant.
Oh, yeah.
It's maybe the best part of The Rise of Skywalker, a movie I don't love, is that there's a bunch of guys in chanting.
You're talking about
hoods.
The Sith arena, right?
Yeah, that is a great part of that movie.
What is it with the hooded figure chanting that gets
just,
your
it's just,
you know,
it's just
your
cool.
Tickling?
It's cool. It's scary. Like it's it? Cool. It's effective. You can't see their faces. I don't know. I just like it.
Okay.
Cool. Anyway, all these people are chanting. Shatner, not really threatened by this. I mean, he's a little threatened.
He sits in a pew, doesn't he?
Yeah, he walks up and he sits in a pew.
Just like, oh, I'm guessing I'm going to participate in this.
He's Pepe Le Pew. He sits in a pew.
Yeah.
And he watches as Corbis emerges now in flowing red robes. He's cosplaying as Emperor Palpatine.
He is the high Satanist.
Yes, he's the high
he's the elite
priest.
He's the high priest Satanist.
Of this satanic cult.
Yeah.
So he goes up and he starts the ritual. They're like daily prayer session, I suppose.
Yeah.
They have a little conflict inside of the church.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're going to have a test of faith. That's it.
Right.
Shatner pulls out his gun and shoots one of the Satanists.
Oh, you're forgetting the prayer battle.
Because, oh, yeah, they have a prayer battle.
Yeah, because Corbis is doing all this satanic stuff, and then he's holding the amulet and saying the Our Father, and I just wrote down prayer battle, like, question mark?
Yeah. It's a test of wills.
See, your thing with, like, cloaked figures, you know, you liking, I like prayer battles.
Mm-hmm.
When I see, like, in an Exorcist or Demonic Presence movie, and it's, like, some possessed demon lady, it's usually a woman, always saying, like, some demonic incantations, then you have the Exorcist doing, like, the Our Father, and be like, The power of Christ compels you. It's like that is like my favorite because it's like literally like you're battling with your words. Like nothing physically is actually happening. You're just throwing words and seeing what sticks. And
this is a movie very much in the shadow of The Exorcist. So
it very much is.
They took that from take that inspiration.
Yeah.
But I think it does something new with it. So they have the little prayer battle. The prayer doesn't work.
Right.
Shatner is forced to resort to his gun. And he kills one of the Satanists who melts into a puddle of wax.
And when a hooded figure gets shot, it should be important to note that like they spew green wax. Like
yes.
They have green blood apparently because they're possessed or mind controlled. I'm not sure how to like classify it, but they're in one way or the other, they're like slaves to the high priest.
Yeah, they're possessed by the ghost of a Satanist past.
Yeah. Oh, good one. And, so, yeah, when one of the hooded figures gets shot, they bleed green blood or wax, whatever, which one you want to go with. And it's just, like, a little jarring at first. You're like, oh, like, they just have green blood.
Yeah.
Cool. Continue.
So he melts into a puddle, and Corbis looks at Shatner and points to his gun and essentially says, like, is that your faith? Is that your God? And is a gun?
Oof. Real metaphorical.
Yes. Very metaphorical. Very good stuff.
Yeah.
Shatner understands the logic and realizes he just gave into temptation and killed someone in what he was trying to make a religious test. He's corrupted himself. He is as good as evil now. So he runs out of the church. He's surrounded by all these dudes who are now out there, all these Satanists.
None of these are really like putting up a fight, by the way. They're just surrounding
him. Yeah, they're standing.
Yeah.
They're present.
There's a good, I'm sure there's like a movie comparison. It's like, it's like Walking Dead when they're just like running through the zombies that can't run. They're just walking. That's kind of what this is. They're not putting up a fight.
They're they're letting Corbis take care of it.
Yeah.
Our man Corbis. Ernest Borgnine's really good in this movie. He's good.
I will grant you that. Yeah. He is really good in this movie. He commits to it.
He really commits.
Yeah.
Oh, I think No, he hasn't turned into the thing yet.
Yeah, we don't want to get there yet.
Yeah, we're not at that point yet.
Turns into a big spider with
Shatner,
head.
Shatner like pulls a cross out and he turns into a snake. And at that point, Shatner is put upon by all these Satanists who subdue him, knock him out, bring him back inside the church.
Cut to
Tom Skerritt.
Can we just talk about the transition at this point? Because the transition is not graceful at all. Like literally, you just see like all you see is like William Shatner like bent because he tries to get into his car and there's a Satanist in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And my thought is like, open the door and shove the guy out. He's not going to put up a fight. But in his mind, in the movie rules, it's like, I can't go in the car. Yeah. So then he just like backs up against the car door.
Shatner's realizes he's already fallen into darkness. He knows he can't escape his fate.
Motherfucker's got to get out of there. He's got to get out of there. And he just like goes back against the doors. He's like sliding down and he's like sitting on the ground and he's getting surrounded. And then literally at that moment, it just cuts to Tom Skerritt.
Yeah, we cut to Tom Skerritt and his wife.
Science experiment.
What's her name in this?
Her name is Emma.
It's Emma.
Emma.
I believe it's Emma. But his wife is psychic, and she is being experimented on by our good friend, Eddie Albert.
You might say this is an Ed and Lorraine Warren thing, where it's like, you know, Tom Skerritt's...
he's a scientist, and they're using his wife's latent ESP abilities to, I guess, predict the future.
Predict the future, yeah.
And so there, she's laying on a table, and she's saying things she can see in her dreams. And eventually she just starts seeing flashes of the future of the rest of the movie.
It does not look good.
She's a Satanist. She sees a guy dressed like a ram. She sees herself screaming against a glass wall. She knows that there's some dirty business to be had.
It's not looking good.
At the same time that she's having this vision, a man comes into the room and gives Tom Skerritt a note. Tom Skerritt with a commanding mustache, mind you.
It is a great mustache.
I love his mustache.
It's a fantastic mustache.
I mean, he's always had a great mustache.
He has, yeah.
Especially so here. Gives him a note. He grabs his wife and he says, "My family's in trouble. We got to go." We cut back to Shatner, who's now...
Is he tied upside down yet?
He's tied upside down on a cross.
Yep. Arnold Schwarzenegger, end of day style.
Yes, end of day style. Corbus is doing a ritual with him. They've drawn a pentagram on his chest. He's upside down. Corbus starts emitting some ritual speak. He's speaking Latin.
Have they taken him to the outside place yet? Or is this still at the church?
They're still at the church, I believe.
Because the outside place is really funny.
Yeah, the outside place is great. A puff of smoke, and Corbus turns into a ram.
Supposedly.
Yes.
The devil.
Supposedly the devil.
It's not really confirmed that we're seeing Satan.
Or at least his agent on Earth.
Right. It's like it could be like a major demon, but it also could be Satan himself.
Yes. He is possessed by the power of Satan.
A little bit ambiguous at this point.
And they're calling for this guy's name. This guy named Bill.
Yeah. I thought it was Michael.
No, it's like
Fife?
I thought it was Bill Fife. It's something Fife.
Because he's Mark Preston.
Yes.
I swore I thought his name was Michael.
It's something Fife.
Yeah, yeah, definitely Fife. Anyway, he's calling back, and we learn later that, like, who he's calling to is, like, a descent or, like, a ancestor of his.
Yeah.
When they were, like, living in a pilgrim days. Yes. Yeah.
So they're calling for this guy named Martin Fife. That was it.
Martin Fife.
Martin Fife.
Yep, that's it.
To enter the body of Shatner.
Yes.
They do not finish the ritual.
Right.
But. They kind of set it in motion. Shatner lets out this ear-pitching shriek.
Like, we can talk about Shatner all day just in his ability to scream beautifully.
It is equal to, if not better, than his scream in the body double episode of Star Trek.
Because it starts with, like, a medium-pitched male voice but goes to a high-pitched female.
It is fantastic.
It's like, literally like that.
Anyway, he's shrieking. We cut back to Skerritt, who's now in Arizona. With his wife, driving their station wagon through the desert. They meet up with the local town sheriff.
They're
Have you found my family yet?
This fucking guy.
Found my family yet? The sheriff's like,
piece of shit, sheriff.
A bunch of people went missing in that storm we had.
Yeah.
That devil's rain.
I
can't devote my guys to your family right now when they're low on the list of priorities.
In the list of priorities.
So Skerritt's like, I'm gonna go into the town myself.
They have two police officers on this.
Like, they have like two police officers for this like middle of nowhereville.
Yeah.
So he drives he and his wife into the abandoned town. It is completely abandoned. Can't see any Satanists, no Shatner, no nothing.
Yet.
They're looking around. You see a brief hint of a figure in a window.
Yeah.
They look through one of the buildings, and they see the church. They realize the church doesn't really look like it belongs. It looks like a New England building that is now in the middle of a desert.
In Arizona.
It looks very much like the church from Westworld.
It's kind of weird because this is like New England pilgrimage times, but it's taking place in Arizona where there are palm trees.
Yes. Very good stuff.
We're not going to comment on that, I guess.
No, it's not modern day. I mean, modern day for 1975.
If this is supposed to be about like, you know, descendants of the congregation, shouldn't it be taking place in like New England?
I guess they moved to the other side. I mean, I guess that's why at the beginning the mom was like, Corbis found us. They moved so far away that he eventually found him.
But apparently they moved in not too far away.
Yeah, well, whatever. Corbis picked up his church from New England and flew it to the desert.
They moved.
Yeah,
they moved. Jim Jones style.
They moved. Jonestown. They see this church. They go in. They see all these satanic symbols. They figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They walk back out of the church when Shatner's car starts driving directly at them. They jump out of the way. The car skirts, crashes into a building, and a young-looking cowboy guy runs out into a building, into a saloon. Skerritt and his wife follow. They're in. They're searching for this guy. They don't know where he is. They don't know what he looks like.
I'm so fucking excited.
This successfully tense sequence.
It is successfully tense.
Skerritt searching the rooms with his shotgun, looking for this figure, the Satanist in here. Eventually, he checks the second to last door. The figure pops out of the other one, and it is John Travolta.
Yeah!
Extremely young John Travolta with black eyes, wax upper half of his face. He's very unrecognizable.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it's John Travolta.
It took me a little bit to realize it was him.
Well, because in IMDb, he's credited as Danny.
Yeah, Danny is the most, like, they got to post-production, realized they wanted him to have a name, wrote in the credits name I've ever heard.
It's just like not Satanist cult follower number
in the
three.
In the script, he was definitely Satanist number one. They just came up with a name in post when they realized he was getting credit.
Yeah.
But he and Skerritt have a fight. Skerritt successfully knocks him out, but not after a bit of conflict between the two of them. Yeah, they knock him out. They can't get any answers out of him because he's a possessed Satanist. But they see he doesn't have eyes. And they run out, and there's a bunch of other people in the town now. Oh, no.
A lot of cloaked figures.
They got to run for it.
Yeah.
They hop into the station wagon and take off. But.
They had to stop.
Yeah, because, they have to stop.
You know, because they stop eventually, and Tom Skerritt's wife's like, why are you stopping? He's like, I got to go back for my brother. It's like, are you crazy?
He's like, my brother's with the Satanist. I got to go get him.
And so, like, he gets out.
And decides he's going to walk back to town.
And she keeps driving, though.
Yes. And the whole time in this scene, they're in this, like, three-layer station wagon.
Yeah.
There's someone in the backseat.
Absolutely.
I spent the whole time like, oh, my God, look in the backseat, or when is someone going to pop out?
Yep.
And then,
lo and behold,
yeah, there we go.
The mom.
It's the mom. The mom pops up.
With her eyes not in there.
His wife screams. The mom grabs her.
Car crashes.
Back to Skerritt.
Cut to.
Who cannot get back to town. Oh, no, he runs after the car when he hears the crash. She's not there.
Right.
He's now back in the town.
So it has now turned into a double rescue mission.
Yes. We now have a rescue mission.
Also, fuck the mom, right?
That is famous. Yes.
Remember that at the beginning of the
Shatner
movie?
Shatner went to rescue his mom.
And they're
got
just like,
captured.
Nah.
Skerritt and his wife went to rescue him. She got captured. So now Skerritt has to rescue three people.
Yeah.
And also their dad. They keep mentioning like their dad may be there, but I thought he melted at the beginning.
That was a weird thing.
He melted.
The plot of this movie, in terms of like what the major objective is, gets more convoluted as it goes on.
There's a lot of business.
Yeah. So now, after he sees his wife is gone, I think he goes back to the town
where he lives, or where he's like staying. And we discover that his friend,
not at Redwood,
his friend Eddie Albert has come with him.
Oh yeah, this guy.
And they're looking through the book.
He makes the dumbest decision in this movie.
John gave them the book. And this guy's looking through the book, and he's like, I think this is a satanic book. I think this is a cult of Satanists.
Yeah.
And Skerritt's like, it doesn't make sense, even though he saw the ritual zone.
And people with no eyes.
Yeah, and people with no eyes.
Like, Tom Skerritt's still trying to be, like, a logical skeptic at this point. Like, you know those characters that are like, I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation for this. And they're like, bitches, they got no eyes.
Yeah, they have no eyes. But they're talking, and Eddie Albert's insistent that this is something deeply concerning. They're Satanists, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
So the two of them head to the town. They head to the town.
Well, I'm thinking, where's the part that Shatner actually does get possessed? Because that happens in the movie.
I skipped over something.
Okay, yeah.
Before he goes to meet Eddie Albert and they look at the book, Skerritt gets a disguise cloak.
This is one of my favorite parts. And this is my second favorite part of the whole
movie.
Breaks
into this outdoor, like, Sermon on the Mountain, like, ritual.
Yeah. This is Raiders of the Lost Ark, Nazis melting
set. This is
set.
Remarkably similar to the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
The set looks very similar.
The costuming looks similar. Someone melts in it, like Tot, the Nazi. But it's a very similar setup to the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And so they're doing this ritual to, like, once again get William Shatner possessed.
By Martin Fife.
And
our good friend.
Tom Skerritt, all he's doing is just
slowly walking.
He's slowly watching. Not making any moves yet. He doesn't want to blow his cover, obviously. Yeah. So he just slowly walks up a little bit closer, keeping an eye
on. There's a really cool shot, though, where he, like, you see, like, a hooded figure walk up. And then turns to look at the camera, and it's Skerritt.
Yeah.
It's a very cool reveal of him in the disguise.
Yeah.
Very nice rack photos.
But all of this after happening, like, Tom Skerritt does nothing, which results in Shatner getting possessed.
Oh, yeah, Shatner gets 100% possessed because Skerritt just kind of watches while it happens.
Doesn't
He's
jump
curious.
In. It's like, no! Like, yeah. Nope, doesn't do any of that.
Meanwhile, Travolta is walking through the crowd as well.
Yes. Because he's like, he's a smart possessed.
Yeah,
Satanist.
He's a smart. He's credited Satan. He's featured extra.
Yes.
And up in the mount, Borgnine turns into the ram again. He successfully possesses Shatner with the spirit of Martin Fife. Shatner now has black eyes, the wax upper head. Skerritt is concerned. Travolta spots him and screams and is like,
outsider.
Outsider. That was it.
Yeah.
Outsider. Skerritt's concerned because he just got spotted. The figure in front of him turns around. It's his mom. He's like, oh no, my mom and my brother have now been possessed by pilgrims.
Late, by pilgrim Satanists.
By pilgrim Satanists.
Yep.
So Skerritt now runs for it. He gets into a fight with one of them. He punches Travolta at one point. Back to the town. Takes refuge in the saloon again, where one of them comes at him with a pitchfork and he stabs them with it. In reverse.
Is this where the flashback scene comes in that explains the whole pilgrimage thing?
Yes, this is when the flashback scene happens.
Because that is what tied it all together. Because the description of the movie in IMDb is about that flashback.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get that flashback until, it's not even like...
Like an hour into the movie.
An hour into the movie. So like, oh, this is what the movie's actually about. Which is, you know, that Corbis is...
Was a pilgrim.
They were like living in Town of Salem days. And essentially, like,
the local priest came to burn down their meeting spot.
And they were going to burn them at the stake and all that stuff, which included William Shatner is casted as, like, the ancestor.
The good Satanist.
The good Satan. Yeah, they're a good Satanist in this.
His wife decided to turn them in with the condition that Shatner not be burned with them.
Yeah.
The priest is like, no, you did supposed support Satan. You're going to burn.
Yeah. And Corbis also burns.
Yes. Corbis makes all of his followers, including two children, pray to Satan that they will stay faithful and one day they will be returned to the earth after they're sent to hell. So he makes them all pray. They're all burnt. And that kind of gives us the context as to what's happening in the modern day era, that Corbis has returned. He has the power of the devil, and he's bringing his old followers back to life into the bodies of their ancestors.
Or their descendants.
Their descendants.
Yeah. But yeah, you get that an hour into the movie.
I like it.
I was not a fan. I'm like, oh, now I know what this movie's about.
I like that it's just kind of this creepy movie up until that point when we finally get the context.
Creepy or just ambiguous?
It is creepy.
I thought it was
a little bad. It is a good movie.
Movie hasn't ended, though.
Yes. Movie has not ended. The America has not fallen yet to the forces of evil from their past.
This is after the flashback scene.
Yes, this is after the flashback scene. That fight happens where he stabs the guy with a pitchfork. Killed a guy with a trident.
Yeah.
There's an Anchorman reference for you.
Thank you.
I am broken.
John Travolta is not in that.
He is not in that movie. But he runs back, and that's when we have the Eddie Albert scene where he shows the book.
Yeah.
He's like, in the book, it says that the names of the people are here.
Right, and he says, Martin Fife.
Anyone who was possessed, their name is written in blood in this book. And they look, and who's there? Shatner's name, Mark Preston.
Yeah.
Because it has appeared in the book spontaneously.
Yep.
Now that his soul is...
I wasn't here this morning.
Now that his soul is in the Devil's Rain. Spelled R-A-I-N, which we'll get to.
Like just regular
rain. Yeah, it is not the Devil's Rain. Like he's not in
R-E-I-G-N.
He is not in hell yet.
Right.
But Albert and Skerritt decide they're heading back to town. They're going to show these Satanists what rescue his family. So they go.
Yeah.
They're...
Talk about how good of a job they did.
there are some lapses of judgment made in the following sequence.
A few.
They head into the church and they hear...
His wife's still missing.
Oh, his wife's still missing. They head into the church and there's moaning. The same moaning from the opening credits over that Bosch painting. They're searching for where the moaning's coming from. It's in the floorboards. I like that both the forces of good and evil hide their object in the floorboards.
Yeah.
It's a good bit. Good bit. They rip it open. They find this big vase. In the front of it, there's a glass window.
You can see
people screaming and banging against the glass inside.
These are the souls trapped inside
the
Devil's Rain.
That they've taken out of the bodies.
Are put in this vase.
And swapped out with the pilgrim souls.
Right.
So this is the Devil's Rain.
That is the Devil's Rain.
It's raining inside of it.
Right. This is the Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, they're all being subjected to this torture inside of there. Hence the moaning.
Yeah.
They're holding this thing. They're like, this is the power of the Satanists. We have it now.
Yeah.
They hear the chanting. The Death Eaters are coming back.
Yeah.
So they run up to the balcony in this church.
And they have the Devil's Rain with them.
They have the Devil's Rain with them. But these idiots leave the book, the thing that the Satanists want, on the floor.
On the floor.
On the floor.
Right next to the altar. Yeah.
So Travolta comes in, and he's looking around. And he's like, the floorboard has been ripped open, and our vase is gone.
But right next to it.
But right here, there's a book.
It's a book.
I wonder if this is the book that guy's been looking for. He grabs it, and he brings it out to Borgnine, who is ecstatic. He got his book. He's been searching for this for 300 years.
Which, what?
And they left it on the floor, and he gets it.
Just wait till you hear how they get the Devil's Rain back.
That's
my favorite part. Can we get to that?
We'll get to it in a second.
Okay.
So Ferdinand's ecstatic. He has this book. His plans can now be set into motion. He throws it up into the air. He is so excited. He leads his followers into the church. They're going to convert Skerritt's wife into... Or they're going to possess her with someone.
Yeah.
Because this is the perfect alignment of the stars or whatever, where all of the family members in this unit are all descendants of the original pilgrims.
Yeah.
So they bring him in. Skerritt's up there and he sees that they're bringing his wife in. He's pissed. He's got to rescue her. So he does the superhero move and leaps off the platform.
He leaps off the balcony.
Punches a Satanist in the face.
Does
and then
a
is,
superhero landing on the ground,
superhero
too.
Landing and is immediately captured.
Yep.
It is less than 5 seconds of conflict before he is
captured. Because, there's 30 Satanists in one of
him. He was just powered by pure male rage to rescue his wife.
All that masculinity.
And it did not go well for him. He is captured.
He gets captured.
Now we just have poor Eddie Albert up in the balcony holding this vase of souls. the bargaining chip they could have used to probably rescue his wife.
Yeah.
So he decides...
By the way, the mom is still possessed.
The mom is possessed. Shatner is possessed. The wife's about to be possessed.
She's about to be.
As is Skerritt now. So Eddie Albert, instead of staying up in the balcony, carries the Devil's Rain down to ground level. And is like, hey, I have
this amazing thing that you need.
All of your souls in this vase. If you do not let
us go.
All of the Prestons go, Skerritt, Shatner, his wife, the mom, I will destroy this vase and end all your plans.
And what happens after that, Jeff?
A Satanist walks up behind him, grabs his arms, and removes him from the Devil's Rain.
You gave it way too much grace, because essentially what just happens is Dr. He is literally, like, Eddie Albert is holding the vase up with his arms, and literally a Satanist just walks up and grabs it from him.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And Eddie Albert is immediately captured. Their plans have all gone terribly well.
Horribly.
But who now has the devil's reign in their hands? The possessed Shatner.
William Shatner.
Martin Fife in the body of Mark Preston.
And this is a classic. Dig deep. Yeah. You can fight this.
Yeah. Corbis calls him and says, bring the rain to me. We will finish our rituals. We will lay claim to the earth. Satan's power will spread and America will be ours.
Hint, hint.
Yeah. Yeah. All the cool idea. I love this movie. He's carrying it, and Eddie Albert's insisting, you have the power, Martin Fife. You turned to the good once before. You can do it again. Destroy the devil's reign. Corbis is calling, beckoning him to bring it. He says, you will have endless pleasure in the reign of Satan, the devil's reign. You'll have power or whatever. Shatner is conflicted. Eventually, he's reminded by Eddie Albert of his wife back in the Pilgrim days, who was the one who turned them in and was the real hero.
Right.
And thinking of her, whose name I am thinking of. Can I remember? I think it's Isabella. Okay. He was reminded of her sacrifice and throws the devil's reign to the ground where it shatters.
And then
a hole in the roof opens and all the ground starts shaking. All the Satanists are screaming. They're running for the exit. Corbis is unhappy, to say the least. And the devil's reign gives way to the reign of God as all this water comes through the ceiling and starts melting.
Everybody.
Everybody. All of the Satanists start melting.
Including the mom, including William Shatner.
Yeah, it does not go too well for Shatner, the mom.
They all get melted.
Yep. All the Satanists melt. It's pretty much looks like the painting over the opening credits where they're all climbing over each other as waxy goo. We get some really good close-ups of Travolta as he melts.
Oh, yeah. Travolta does a great job of swallowing that goo.
We really don't have too... I know this is a John Travolta-based podcast. We really don't have much to say about him in this movie. He gets a really nice close-up where his face melts.
Yeah.
It's good. Corbis struggles with Skerritt at one moment before he is thrown into the pit where the devil's reign was
Palpatine
kept.
Palpatine style.
Where a gust of flame shoots out, consuming him and lighting the building on fire.
Just like in episode 6.
So any of them who are in the building, who are not melting due to the rain, start melting due to the flame.
Yeah, it was a fire.
Yes, it is a real fire and brimstone looking sequence. Skerritt, Eddie Albert, and his wife all escape past all this melting. And it ends with a beautiful romantic shot of Skerritt and his wife embracing as they spin in a circle. But then the twist, they do a spin. We see the back of Skerritt's head.
And
it's
Corbis!
Ernest Borgnine, in his final moments, has possessed Skerritt's wife and is ready to continue the devil's reign on Earth in his new body.
Cut to the credits.
Cut to credits. It is a great final twist.
It's something. Like, I love the smile that Corbis has. Like,
it's almost the anti-Exorcist ending.
Yeah.
In that you think that evil has been vanquished, but no, evil has just taken a new form to possess this country in a new way.
Yeah.
That is my thesis on this movie. It is a movie about a post-Watergate America where they don't know right from wrong. Many evil is finding new ways to possess the populace.
You know, Jeff, I got to hand it to you. Like, after hearing you talk about all the, subtext and all the overtones of the piece, you know, I almost have to agree.
The 70s was such a great time in Hollywood where even the...
I'm just kidding. This movie is a piece of shit.
Yeah, where even the worst, like, craziest movies in the 70s were fascinating. The New Hollywood, I mean, this is like tail end of New Hollywood, but that's just such a fascinating period of time where a movie like this could get made.
But it did.
And it got made.
How did it get made, Jeff?
that is the extent of the plot. Fun fact about this movie, it was funded by mob money, according to Ernest Borgnine. The mafia paid for it, and the cast was never paid for their work.
Yep.
I mean,
tough break for John Travolta.
Thanks. Honestly, thanks to the Mafia for giving us this movie, you know.
Why is the Mafia funding this? Is there something we don't know?
The Mafia's fund a lot of movies in the
why are they funding this movie? Is a scheme.
I'm sure
it's a laundering scheme.
I mean, probably someone was like, some laundering scheme, or someone's friend wanted to make this movie. Maybe Robert Flest was in the Mafia. I'm sure we could find out if we did a little more research, but I have not done so.
Robert Flest isn't alive to tell us if he was in the Mafia or not.
Yes, unfortunately.
But maybe John Travolta can.
Yes.
Maybe John Travolta can, like, give in some
light. Do you know what Travolta said when he was asked about this movie?
How terrible it was.
He said, that's a terrible movie. He's like, there's so many big stars in it. How did they do that? Mob money, obviously.
Mob money, man. How'd they get... Wait, so none of the cast got paid?
Borgnine said he did not get paid. I'm assuming he's the biggest star in this movie. If he didn't get paid, no one else got paid.
Shatner didn't get paid?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
At the very least,
Borgnine. I mean, if it's a mob movie and you don't get paid, you're not going to raise hell about that. What are you going to do? You go to the Better Business Bureau and then wake up with a horse head in your bed the next morning?
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not really an avenue to complain when the Mafia is involved.
But what a start to John Travolta's career!
What a start! A near speechless role. He has a few lines. He does get credit in the opening and end credits.
Yeah.
Which is why we're covering it. But yeah, it's a fascinating first role for him in the sense that he is playing a cultist. And this is the movie where he got handed the book Diagenics, which would later...
Scientology.
So this is not only the beginning of Travolta's career as an actor, it's the beginning of his involvement in Scientology.
Ding, 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 ding.
A subject that we will undoubtedly have to... dance with a lot during this.
Battlefield Earth.
This is the beginning of a lot of things. It's a great touchstone, just in terms of John Travolta as well as the history of Hollywood itself.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating movie from its period.
And we're coming at like a 57 minute mark, but just in what I would say, my final thoughts is: don't be disillusioned. This is a bad movie.
It's a good movie.
It's don't stop. Okay.
It's a good. Any if you agree that this is a good movie, please send us an email, travoltingpodcast@gmail.com, and say it's a good movie.
It's not a good movie,
Stuart.
Jeff.
You have no idea what you're talking about.
So, all right, I'm speaking to the sane members of our audience, all 20 of you, and I will agree with you, Jeff, on one thing. Like, even some of these really bad 70s cheesy cultist movies have some sort of fascination behind them, and just like how they got made and how they were allowed to like get these big stars and just come up with the creative decisions they were able to create. I think if you're someone who's like really into a film history buff kind of zone and you just want to like go back and do this whole like tail end of the new Hollywood age, I think this one is definitely something that you should watch just for purely of a historical lesson on that.
Or if you just like cool movies where people melt and there's a bunch of Satanists walking around, have I got the picture for you. It's grungy, it's grimy, it's a lot of fun.
See, I think though, like for people who are looking for these cult movies, I feel like these people are also looking for some intensity. I don't think this movie really gets that intense.
Yeah, there's not too much of intensity, but I think it makes up for it in just kind of like
how weird it is.
Yeah, it's a cult movie, both in the sense that it's about a cult, but it's just kind of one of those culty movies where crazy stuff happens, that you can tell that there was a lot of fun put into like the grodiness of it all.
But you know what's also interesting though is the movie he did, Travolta got after this.
Yes.
Being Carrie.
Yeah, we're starting this podcast off with two movies that are ostensibly in some respect about Satanism.
Yeah.
Which maybe bodes well ill for the rest of this podcast. It's a sign that when we get to Look Who's Talking Now, we're going to want to be Satanists.
Well, it's like it's interesting because if this movie is sort of about that corruption element in America, like then I see Carrie as sort of this religious corruption then.
Yeah.
Like some morality corruption and like what that sort of brings. Because essentially it's like Carrie is born out of wedlock and because of that, she is a Satanist. Or she's like this superpowered person that has, I don't know, she's not a bad person,
yeah,
but in her mother's eyes, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
You know what Carrie is? It is a very fascinating movie about a lot of good topics that we will be discussing in next week's episode. We don't want to give the audience too much, and then they decide not to listen to next week's episode.
Right, true. So come join us when we talk about the next Satanist cult movie, Carrie. Mm-hmm.
But you know what is fascinating about this movie, though? Fun fact that I learned.
Okay.
This is in the IMDb trivia, so obviously IMDb trivia is, you know, spotty at best.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're just going to print the legend. Apparently, for his facial prosthetic, William Shatner had a full head cast made.
Mm-hmm.
They would later use this same cast to make mass-produced Halloween masks of Shatner's face, one of which would be painted white and used for Michael Myers in the Halloween franchise.
So you heard it here. Devil's Reign was the creation
of the Michael Myers mask. So fascinating.
That is pretty fascinating, because given that Michael is a demon from hell.
Yes, Michael is William Shatner's face from The Devil's Reign. It's just so cool.
Very cool.
A very fun fact.
Very fun fact. Well, Jeff, we're hitting the hour mark here. Thinking about time to wrap things up. We had a very productive episode, giving you guys a little quick introduction to our show, what we're talking about. I hope this hasn't turned people away.
If you found this to be a truly disastrous episode and that we don't know what we're talking about, please stick with us.
Please stick with us. We'll get better. no, we won't.
But no, honestly, I do hope you all had a good time. Watch this movie. It's available for free on Prime. You're not going to lose anything. It's well worth 80 minutes of your time to just see some people melt.
I disagree. I think it's great historically.
It's a very fascinating movie that we had fun talking about. We hope you are as interested in the topics we'll be talking about as we are. John Travolta is a very fascinating guy, and we can't wait to dig into him more, including next week, as we said, with Carrie.
Mm-hmm.
Where we'll have our very special guest and a good friend, Matt Abalde. It'll be posting next week. The movie is not available for free anywhere as of the recording date of this episode, but it can be rented on most streaming services.
For like $2, $3.
It was like $3.99.
Yeah.
Well worth it. Fantastic movie. Looking forward to talking about it. Otherwise, make sure to please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to for this podcast. We're still in the process of figuring out exactly where it's going to be posted. I think it's going to be on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. So wherever you're watching it, please do that. And if you have the other services, maybe throw us a bone and subscribe on a few different things. Don't do that if you don't want to, but we would appreciate it. We're a beginning podcast, and we're looking forward to what the future will bring.
Amen. Yeah.
You can follow us at Travolting Pod on both Twitter or Instagram for updates, some behind the scenes stuff, some fun information.
We don't have a Facebook page, right?
We do not have a Facebook page as of this time. There may be one by the time this episode drops.
Yeah.
Go on Facebook, type Travolting. Maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't. Russian roulette with Travolting Pod on Facebook.
Yeah.
I've tentatively set up a Reddit subreddit, r/Travolting. If anyone wants to have discussions about The Devil's Reign with anyone else who listens to this podcast, I'll be putting a little discussion thread. I don't expect it to really pop off right now, but it's there in case anyone wants it. If you have any questions you don't want in a social media format, you can email us at travoltingpodcast@gmail.com.
travoltingpodcast@gmail.com.
If you have any complaints about this episode or our show, please don't write a bad review, but email us at mitchmcconnell@senate.gov, and we will get back to you promptly. If you want to follow me personally on Twitter, you can find me at Jeff W. Sweeney. I mostly just retweet pictures of the prequels, but you can find me there if you want to tweet at me. Feel free. Stuart, do you have anywhere you're openly accessible?
Just follow me on Instagram at StuartElmore95. I am a photographer and freelance filmmaker in Chicago, so that's it for me.
And if you have any work, I'm just kidding. We're not going to hawk ourselves in this podcast. We're here to talk about movies and not sell ourselves.
Yeah, right.
And before we head out, special thanks to Rebecca Johnson for graphic design, and my good friend Michael Van Bodegum Smith for our theme music. which should be playing right now as we lead you out of the episode.
Yes, we are playing this as we're leaving the episode.
Yeah.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you all for tuning in. Tune in next week for Carrie. Hope you all have a great week.
Bye.